Welcome back, Crimesters, to another Missing Monday episode. I'm your host, Holly, and let me just say, it has been a minute since I have done a Missing Monday episode. I feel like every time I do a new Missing Monday, I always say that, but I have been doing these a lot less frequently than I would like because these are the cases that I am so incredibly passionate about. But, you know, life happens, things are busy around here, and hopefully here in the near future, I will be able to find a rhythm with doing them more frequently. If you are new to the podcast, first of all, welcome. I'm Holly. This is Crime with Holly, and I am so happy to have you. Missing Mondays is a segment that was created to help keep missing persons' name and information in the media the best that I can, and to hopefully help aid in their return home. It is my goal and my mission here at Crime with Holly to continue to share these cases of the missing, no matter how much or how little information is out there. Because at the end of the day, these stories deserve to be told and their names deserve to be remembered. I am absolutely shocked that we are practically in July already. That means my favorite time of year, the burr months, are literally right around the corner. And let me tell you, those final months of the year are my absolute favorite time. Summer's great, but I am really, truly a fall girly. I adore the fall, I adore Halloween, and that transition into all things festive and Christmas after Thanksgiving. For many people, these final months of the year means family gatherings, holidays spent together, meals shared, and gift exchanges. But for many other families, these holidays and final months of the year bring a lot of pain and heartache. Today's episode is one that Thanksgiving is a lot harder for one family. Not only do they have Thanksgiving without a loved one, but their loved one actually went missing on Thanksgiving night. But before we get into all of those details of today's case, I have not one, not two, but three Patreon members to shout out to today. Thank you to Sheena, Rachel, and Tammy for joining my little true crime Patreon family. Thank you for ending June on the best possible note by supporting the podcast. You three officially made this month's roster of absolute legends. Thank you so much for being here and helping make Crime with Holly possible. If you guys want to be like my girls Tashina, Rachel, and Tammy, you too can join the little fam by visiting www.patreon.com/crimewithholly. And for just $2 holla a month, you can get every single episode ad-free. That is all of the old episodes that are already out that maybe you haven't listened to yet, and every single new episode going forward. One more thank you to the three of you for closing out June for me on a fabulous note. Okay, so with all of that said, let's get into the details of today's case. Today's Missing Monday episode is on the disappearance of Cole Thomas. On July 2nd, 1994, Christopher Cole Thomas, who went by his middle name of Cole, was born to Chris and Kathy Thomas. He grew up in Live Oak, Florida, in a close-knit family that adored him from the very beginning. Cole was the first grandchild on both sides of the family, and everyone was overjoyed by his arrival. He was also the first boy on his mom, Kathy's side of the family, so he was absolutely showered with love and attention. By all accounts, Cole was an incredible kid. His father later told Marissa Jones, the host of the Vanish podcast, that the only time he ever had to get on to Cole was for not picking up after himself. Other than that, he was everything that a parent could hope for. Cole was exceptionally intelligent and wise far beyond his years. As a child, he was naturally drawn to spending time with adults rather than kids his own age. He also excelled academically, and doing well in school wasn't something his parents had to push. It was something Cole genuinely cared about. In fact, before he even graduated high school, he had already earned his Associate of Arts degree through a local community college. That is how driven he was. Because of his academic achievements, Cole received scholarship offers from several colleges, but he ultimately chose to attend the University of Florida in Gainesville. As impressive as he was in the classroom, the people who knew Cole say his biggest strength was his heart. He loved making people laugh, and once you became his friend, you were a friend for life. If someone needed help, Cole was the kind of person who would drop everything to be there. That included his grandmother during her battle with cancer. She recalled on the Vanish podcast that throughout her chemotherapy treatments, Cole stayed by her side, helping with whatever she needed and making sure that she was cared for every step of the way. When Cole was 9 years old, his parents told him that he was going to be a big brother. He had been hoping for a little brother, so when they found out that they were expecting another boy, he couldn't have been more excited. And when Zachary was born, Cole embraced that role completely. When Zach was just 3 years old, he was diagnosed with autism. Cole stood beside his mom through countless therapy sessions and appointments, doing whatever he could to help. The two brothers shared a very special bond, and Cole always made time to play with Zach and be present in his life, despite being 9 years older. In many ways, it was Zach who inspired Cole's interest in medicine. He began talking about becoming a doctor, or at the very least pursuing a career in the medical field. After graduating high school, Cole moved into the dorms at the University of Florida and continued the same work ethic that had defined him for years. He maintained excellent grades and stayed focused on his future. But after a few years in college, something began to change. His mom noticed that the passion he'd always had for school just wasn't there anymore. She's never been sure exactly why. Maybe it was the pressure of juggling college while working two jobs. Or maybe it was because he had started spending time with older people who were making far more money than he was, and that lifestyle looked appealing. Whatever the reason, Cole eventually told his family that he wanted to step away from school, get to work, and learn a trade. His family was disappointed because they knew how much potential he had, but they also wanted to support his decisions. Cole assured them that this wasn't giving up on college forever. It was more just taking a break. He told them that it was a temporary thing and that he would return to finish his degree before they knew it. And honestly, I can understand where Cole was coming from. He had been pushing himself for years. He started taking college courses while he was in the ninth grade. He spent years balancing advanced classes, college coursework, and two jobs, all while trying to maintain exceptional grades. That's a whole lot of pressure. One of his jobs was a security guard at a nightclub, and the other was at a nutrition store inside the mall. Even though his tuition was covered through scholarships, Cole didn't want his family having to financially support him in any kind of way. He wanted to do it all on his own. But eventually, something had to give. His grades started slipping, and Cole made the difficult decision to put school on hold. At just 22 years old, and only a few months away from earning his bachelor's degree, Cole officially left college. Instead, he began learning electrical work from someone he knew. Before long, he was traveling the country, working construction and remodeling jobs at businesses in different states. Eventually, he started working alongside a man named Stephen Worley. Whenever there was downtime between projects, Cole would return home to spend time with his family before heading back out on the road. Near the end of October, before he was scheduled to begin another project in Minnesota, Cole asked if he can come home for a few days, and his family was excited to have him. They wanted him to be there as much as they could have him. After spending the weekend together, Cole's dad, Chris, drove him to a gas station where he was meeting Steven before the two headed north to Minnesota. It was the first time Chris had ever met Steven. Steven assured him that Cole would be safe with him and that he'd look out for his son while they were on the road. At that point, Cole had been working with Steven for about 6 months. And while Cole never voiced any concerns to his dad, he had confided in his mom, Kathy. He told her that he often felt like Steven took advantage of him and that he didn't like the way Steven treated him. But Cole also told her that he was trying to learn the trade. He believed that once he knew the job well enough, he wouldn't need Steven anymore. Chris told his son goodbye, watched him climb into the vehicle with Steven, and the two headed toward Minnesota. What Chris didn't know was that that would be the last time that he would ever see his son. While working on what was expected to be a months-long project in Minnesota, Cole became acquainted with two other members of the crew, Jeremy Carpenter and Julian Velez. One thing I couldn't find during my research was whether Steven already knew of Jeremy or Julian before this project, or if they all met while working together. But after spending weeks on the same job site, the four men became very familiar with one another. Then on Sunday, November 27th, 2016, the weekend after Thanksgiving, everything changed. Cole's father, Chris, had just returned home from the parts store when he pulled into his driveway and immediately knew that something was wrong. His wife, Kathy, and several other family members were standing outside waiting for him. Kathy was on the phone with the North Carolina Police Department. And that is when Chris learned that Cole was missing. Without wasting a second, Chris got on Facebook and found Stephen Worley's account, and he sent him a message telling him to call him immediately. Less than 2 minutes later, his phone was ringing, and it was Stephen. Stephen claimed that he had been trying to get in touch with Chris for the past 2 days, but didn't know how to reach him. Chris didn't believe that for 1 second. He told Steven that if he had truly wanted to contact him, all he had to do was look at Cole's Facebook page where Chris was clearly listed as his father. Steven insisted that he had tried and even claimed that he had contacted their local police department in an effort to find him. Chris cut straight to the point and asked what had happened. Steven's response was chilling. He said, quote, "I think they killed Cole." Chris immediately asked, who? Steven claimed that Cole had driven two men to North Carolina because they were supposedly going to pick up drugs. According to Steven, he believed those men either thought Cole was a police officer or that Cole got scared and something went wrong. Whatever the reason, Steven repeatedly insisted that the two men had killed him. As soon as that phone call ended, Chris and Kathy packed their bags and left for North Carolina to begin searching for their son. The drive should have taken around 8 hours, but because it was the busy Thanksgiving holiday weekend, bumper-to-bumper traffic stretched that trip into 13 agonizing hours. And I honestly can't even imagine what that drive must have felt like for them. Knowing that your son is missing, hearing someone tell you that they believe he had been murdered, and being completely powerless as traffic crawls along, minute by minute, mile by mile. I can only imagine those were the longest 13 hours of Chris and Kathy's lives. My heart absolutely breaks for them knowing they had to spend that entire drive wondering if their son was alive. The very first thing Monday morning, they went straight to the Benson Police Department to begin piecing together what had happened to Cole. That's when they learned he had actually been missing since the night of Thanksgiving, November 24th, 2016. Chris told investigators everything Stephen Worley had said. He explained that Stephen believed Jeremy Carpenter and Julian Velez had killed their son during what he described as a drug run. Now, I do want to briefly mention something here. According to his family, Cole had experimented with drugs while he was in college, but they say he was never a regular drug user. So hearing that he may have been involved in a trip to buy drugs came as a complete shock. Investigators immediately began contacting the men who had been traveling with Cole. They were able to reach Julian, who told detectives that Cole had been driving when he suddenly pulled over, grabbed the keys, jumped out of the vehicle, and ran off in the middle of what Julian described as a panic attack. He claimed they never saw him again. That was the first version of events that was told. It wouldn't be the last one either. As detectives continued asking questions, they wanted to know why these men had traveled all the way to North Carolina if they were supposed to be working in Minnesota. Julian claimed that they had gone there for a family Thanksgiving dinner. The detective then asked him a very direct question: are you sure there weren't any drugs involved? And from that point on, Julian's story started changing. The detective would speak with him, hang up, call him back later, and every single time, another detail seemed to change. The only part that stayed consistent was his claim that Cole had gotten out of the car on his own. While investigators continued trying to untangle the conflicting stories, Cole's family refused to sit around waiting. They made the decision that they weren't leaving North Carolina until they had answers. Chris and Kathy even brought their travel trailer from Florida and lived out of it for the next 2 to 3 months. Every single day, they searched for their son. Meanwhile, investigators kept applying pressure to Jeremy and Julian. Eventually, the story changed yet again. This time, they admitted that someone else had gotten out of the car. According to this new version, Jeremy followed Cole to try to bring him back to the car. Jeremy claimed he found Cole, told him it was cold outside, and urged him to return to the vehicle. He alleged that Cole responded, "I'll be right there." But according to Jeremy, Cole never came back. By this point, investigators knew they weren't getting the truth. So instead of relying on their stories, they started looking for evidence. Surveillance cameras in the area captured something incredibly important. The footage showed Cole and Jeremy walking away from the vehicle together. When detectives confronted Jeremy with that evidence, he changed his story once again. Surprise, surprise. Now, he admitted that he had walked away with Cole, but claimed he was only trying to calm him down because Cole was very nervous. Even with that explanation, the story still didn't make sense. Chris eventually decided to take matters into his own hands. He thought that maybe Jeremy would be more willing to open up if he wasn't speaking to law enforcement. A lot of people get nervous talking to cops, especially if they're involved in shady stuff. So Chris decided that he was going to call him himself. And he called him over and over and over again. And Jeremy never once answered. Finally, Chris's sister-in-law sent Jeremy a message. Jeremy replied saying that he was trying to work up the courage to call Cole's dad back. She assured him that Chris simply wanted answers. Eventually, Jeremy agreed to speak with him. During that conversation, Chris asked about a man named Rudy. By that point, investigators had been told that a group had gone to Rudy's house to buy drugs. Jeremy admitted they had gone there. But when Chris asked where Rudy lived, Jeremy couldn't, or maybe it was he wouldn't, give him an address. Instead, he just kept repeating that the people who lived there were quote unquote bad people. As Chris continued talking with Jeremy, more details about that night slowly began to emerge. According to Jeremy, the entire trip to North Carolina had been arranged by Julian. He allegedly planned to meet someone at a house to purchase an ounce of meth. Jeremy didn't have a driver's license and Julian's license had been suspended, so they convinced Cole to drive them. Chris asked Jeremy if anything unusual had happened once they arrived at the house, and Jeremy told him no. He claimed that he and Cole mostly sat on the couch and that Cole hardly spoke while they were there. After Julian bought the ounce of meth, both Cole and Jeremy reportedly told him it was time to leave so they could get back on the road and return to Minnesota for work. But Julian kept telling them to wait. He said he was waiting on something else. Jeremy said that while they waited, everyone watched the Dallas Cowboys Thanksgiving game because the men at the house were all Cowboys fans. But he also told Chris that both he and Cole felt extremely uncomfortable. According to Jeremy, there were several armed men inside the house who were speaking another language, and the atmosphere became increasingly intimidating for the men. After spending roughly 4 or 5 hours there, the three men finally left. Cole believed that they were going to stop and get something to eat before heading back to Minnesota. But according to Jeremy, it wasn't long before Cole became convinced they were being followed. Jeremy claimed that every time that Cole pulled over, another vehicle sitting about a half mile behind them would also pull over. That caused Cole to panic. He began taking random roads in an attempt to lose whoever he believed was behind them. Jeremy then revealed why Julian had been stalling for so long at the house. According to him, Julian wasn't waiting to leave because of Thanksgiving dinner. He was waiting for more meth to arrive. Instead of leaving with the ounce they originally came to buy, Julian allegedly left with even more drugs. Jeremy claimed that while they were driving, he reached into the backseat, grabbed the meth, and threw it out the window because he was afraid of being caught by law enforcement or by whoever might have been following them. At that point, Chris stopped him. He asked the obvious question, "If you're the one who threw the drugs out, then why are you still here and my son is still missing?" Jeremy's response was simply, "Mr. Thomas, I don't know. I don't know." Jeremy went on to say they eventually arrived in Benson, North Carolina. By then, Cole was visibly terrified. His hands were shaking and he kept saying, "I don't want any part of this." Jeremy claimed Cole pulled the vehicle over and got out. He said he followed him, hoping to calm him down as they walked through the residential neighborhood in the early morning hours. According to Jeremy, they eventually came upon a church. Cole told him that he needed to use the bathroom and walked around the side of the building. Jeremy claimed that he walked behind the church, got down on his hands and knees, and prayed for about 10 minutes. He said that as he finished praying, he heard a car door slam, and he just assumed that it was someone leaving for work. Jeremy claimed that he started calling Cole's name, but he never got a response. He said that was the last time that he ever saw him. According to the Vanish podcast, investigators later developed a very different theory of what had happened. They believe Cole's instincts were correct. He was being followed. According to information discussed on the podcast, a man known as Rudy, another man named TJ, someone who went by the nickname of Gordo, and several others had followed Cole, Julian, and Jeremy into Benson. Investigators believe Julian had tipped those men off to their location. Their theory is that while Cole was near the church, he was forced into another vehicle and taken to a different location and murdered. Chris continued pressing Jeremy for every detail that he could think of. Jeremy claimed that after he couldn't find Cole, he began walking toward a nearby McDonald's because he was thirsty and needed water. While walking there, he said he heard two gunshots. Surveillance footage did confirm that Jeremy walked to the McDonald's. Afterward, he returned to where the vehicle had been parked and eventually met back up with Julian. As investigators continued verifying each piece of the story, they determined that some of what Jeremy told Chris was either false or only partially true. One thing they did confirm was that after Cole disappeared, Julian had possession of Cole's cell phone. And that phone ultimately traveled all the way back to Minnesota with Julian and Jeremy. Investigators were able to track the movements of Cole's cell phone after he disappeared. The data showed the phone moving throughout Benson before eventually returning to Rudy's house. At some point after 4 a.m., the phone was turned off. Then, around 9 that morning, it was powered back on. As soon as it came back online, both Jeremy and Julian began calling it. Investigators believe those calls may have been an attempt to gain access to Cole's phone because it was protected by a passcode. They theorize the calls may have been made in hopes of unlocking it so they could delete anything that might incriminate them. Later that same day, the phone was turned on again, once again at Rudy's residence. Now, investigators believe Cole was murdered. While a definitive motive has never been established, one theory is that the men believed Cole was either an undercover police officer or a confidential informant. According to investigators, Jeremy and Julian reported Cole missing the very night he disappeared. They told officers with the Benson Police Department that Cole had run away. Authorities conducted a quick search of the area but found no sign of him. Because Cole had allegedly left with the vehicle's keys, Jeremy and Julian claimed they had no transportation. Rudy eventually picked them up and they left their contact information with law enforcement in case Cole was found. There are still so many unanswered questions in this case. Without physical evidence or the recovery of Cole's remains, it's incredibly difficult to know exactly what had happened during those final hours. Investigators believe Cole may have simply been in the wrong place at the wrong time. But many also believe this case goes much deeper than what is currently known. Another theory is that Julian owed Rudy money for drugs. And after Jeremy allegedly threw the meth out the window, Rudy wanted to recover what he believed he had lost. It's also unclear whether the account of Cole being kidnapped is completely accurate or whether there were additional events that had never been revealed. There are still far more questions than there are answers on this one. NBC News reported that in July 2017, four men were arrested in connection with Cole's disappearance. Julian Velez, Jeremy Carpenter, Rudy, and TJ were each charged with offenses including felony concealment of a death and felony obstruction of justice. However, in September 2019, those charges were dismissed. At a memorial held for Cole, private investigator David Marshburn told those in attendance that although the charges have been dropped, the investigation was far from over. Marshburn said he believes two of the four men were likely not involved in Cole's death and were being unfairly implicated. However, he also believes at least one of the remaining men bears responsibility for what had happened. He later told the Mount Olive Tribune that the biggest obstacle investigators continue to face is fear. According to Marshburn, the people who know what had happened are afraid of the consequences if they came forward. He has repeatedly called them cowards and said the Thomas family wants only one thing, to bring Cole home. That's really what this case comes down to. Somewhere, someone knows what happened to Cole Thomas. And it may only take one person finally finding the courage to tell the truth for this family to finally get answers they've spent years searching for. Investigators believe there are people with critical information who are afraid for their own safety or afraid of facing criminal consequences. My hope is that one day someone decides that doing the right thing is more important than protecting the wrong people. Because Kathy and Chris deserve to bring their son home. They deserve the chance to lay him to rest with the dignity every family deserves. Christopher Cole Thomas, who went by Cole, was 22 years old, and he was last seen during the early morning hours of November 25th, 2016, near the intersection of East Morgan Street and North Elm Street in Benson, North Carolina. He was wearing a baseball cap, a blue shirt over a black long-sleeve shirt, and dark-colored pants. Cole was 6'1", weighed approximately 200 pounds, had brown blonde hair, blue eyes, and a tribal-style tattoo covering the left side of his chest and shoulder. A reward of up to $50,000 is being offered for information leading to the arrest and conviction of the person or people responsible for Cole's disappearance. Cole's family has also created the Find Cole Thomas Facebook page, which now has more than 12,000 followers. I will have that page linked in the description of this episode if you would like to give them a follow and support the family and show them so much love and ensure them that Cole is never forgotten. I also want to mention, while there are news articles that cover Cole's disappearance, there aren't many that explore the case in great detail. Much of today's information featured in this episode comes from the incredible interviews Cole's family gave to the Vanished podcast. I will link that episode in the description of this one as well, because hearing Chris and Kathy tell their son's story in their own words is incredibly powerful. If you or anyone you know has information about the disappearance of Christopher Cole Thomas, please contact the Benson Police Department at 919-894-2091 or the North Carolina State Bureau of Investigations at 919-779-8188. Crimesters, that is all that I have for this week's Missing Monday. Make sure that you are a part of my private Facebook group. You can find it by searching Crime with Holly Podcast Discussion Group. In there, I share all information and pictures pertaining to the cases that I cover, and I also encourage all members to share all things true crime. You can also follow me over on Instagram at CrimeaHolly, and if you would like more bite-sized true crime content, you can find me on TikTok at crimewithholly.podcast. That is all for this week's episode. I will see you next time. Until then, you guys know what to do. Be aware and take care. Bye-bye.